Hello, I'm Taylor Payne, and some news just in. This is Pod on the Tyne's Transfer Deadline Day Roundup, in which we discuss who's in, who's out, and who's shaking all about. We've taken the sensationally brave decision, stupid, some might say, to fly by the seat of our pants, recording mere hours before the window slams shut. But wonder of wonders, it looks like Newcastle have wrapped up their transfer business, certainly all the key components of it. So following another summer of drama and change, have they done enough? Have they done too much? And what can we expect now the dust is starting to settle? I'm here with George Corgan and Chris Woff. George Corgan, dear boy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. I just want people to know that if over the course of this podcast there was a kind of awkward hissing noise, and it may be us inserting hastily recorded
a not gas escaping from somewhere.
Well, it could be that. It could be that as well. Yes, we're okay. I think, like Chris, quite pleased that this window is, if not quite officially closed at the time of recording, then on the way, and Newcastle have done their business. It's been a long summer. Not the first time we've said that recently, but near the end. And I think, ooh, didn't they do well?
How are you feeling, Chris? Time to exhale.
Yes, I'll be honest that I'm looking forward to what is one of my two favourite days of the year, and that is the day after each of the transfer deadlines. It's weird. It's like, I mean, it was Spencer Downey, who was the former agent, now lawyer, who did our Extra Time podcast the other week, described it as you get to the end of when it gets to the end of a window, it's like when you're in a nightclub and you've been dancing the music on and suddenly stops. I would sort of describe it as if you've ever been in a situation where, like, for example, when we had James, we used to have, when he was young, we had a white noise machine, or when you're in a room and there's like a buzzing noise that you don't necessarily know is there until it just stops, and then you realize
that now,
something's been lifted.
I'm getting that now.
So very much looking forward to this being over. I can only imagine what it's actually like for football executives and the like, when it's this bad for journalists, if you're actually a football executive or an agent or someone involved in the everyday grind of a transfer window. I can only imagine it's horrendous.
Yeah, it must be absolutely hellish. There has been an awful lot of incomings and outgoings, hasn't there? Let's do some headlines, first of all, in 30 seconds or less, chaps. Chris, we'll start with you. Party time. Newcastle get their alpha.
Yes, Newcastle United have completed the deadline day acquisition of Matheus Fernandes Pardo, the Belgium international winger forward who they had long trailed, looked at last summer, would have been the top target going into the summer, but didn't think he was attainable. But they have signed him from Lille from a deal starting at around £51 million.
Nick off, Valtamada's Juve loan.
Nick Valtamada is on his way to Juventus on a season-long loan. It really just hasn't worked out for him so far at Newcastle, but the idea now is he gets some football, hopefully gets a bit of confidence back. Newcastle can't sell him yet. He's worth too much money for them. They have to hope he rebuilds his value, comes back a different, better player, and they can either reintegrate him or sell him at that point.
Chris, dry January, Newcastle spending cap.
Yes, well, the aforementioned Fernandes Pardo, he was Newcastle's alpha target. As you said, the top attacking target that they wanted in the last few days of the window. They had looked at Bilal Elkanous at Stuttgart as well, but they had to make the decision that if they were going to push for somebody, the knock-on effect that would have, and they could have kept their powder dry and then tried to invest in January instead. Now, because they have spent big on Fernandes Pardo, if they want to spend in January, it looks like there will have to be outgoings, but they don't need to sell someone just to balance the books. That would be to facilitate further incomings mid-season.
And finally, no-go Joe Willock stays after a flying start, George.
I love these things. You know, for months it's been looking like Joe Willock was certain to leave the club this summer. He's got a year left on his contract. You know, it's been difficult for him in the past kind of couple of years, but a new manager comes in. He's looked tremendous so far this season, really good. The player that we know he can be, that he's been in spurts, looks really hungry. And yeah, Newcastle want to keep him. There's a very good chance he'll be offered and will accept a new contract. We'll see about that. But yeah, he's risen as players have previously done under Eddie Howe. Really good story.
Excellent stuff. Right then, let's start with that massive transfer breakthrough in the last couple of days. Waffles all round, and I'm not talking about Chris. Newcastle have signed Brussels-born Matías Fernández-Pardo from Lille for a fee of around €60 million on a 5-year contract. Chris, you've written that he was one of our alpha targets. Give us some background on what that means.
Yes, and it's Matthias with one T, whereas Matthias Jaisler has two T's, so we have to remember which one is which. But why one of Newcastle's alpha targets?
It's not
going to
matter too much when we're just saying their names out loud.
Well, it might matter to you if you're writing it down, Chris, or you're putting it in an article, maybe.
Is it Matthias? Is it Matthias? Which one is which? I still need to find that out for Fernández-Pardo. His name is doesn't sound particularly Belgian. That's because he is also of both Spanish and Italian heritage.
Call them both Matty and have done with it.
Yeah, well, exactly. But so by one of Newcastle's alpha targets, he was somebody who had long been liked by the recruitment department and Eddie Howe previously, and now Matthias Jaisler. So Newcastle looked at him last summer. They didn't actually make a bid, but they had seriously considered going for him. And then in the spring, he was or would have been their top target. And at that point, once Newcastle had missed out on Europe, the feeling that was given or the impression that was given from those in and around Fernández-Pardo was that he wanted to go to a Champions League club if he was going to go anywhere. Lille did qualify for the Champions League. He expected to leave, but it was to be to a club who were going to be in Europe's elite competition. And so Newcastle looked elsewhere. Victor Munoz was the second choice, if you like, replacement for Anthony Gordon. Obviously got gazumped for him by Liverpool. And part of the reason for that is they eventually end up getting Basmane Touré. But Basmane Touré, Howe saw him potentially as being a right winger, but also he basically plays out wide. The difference with both Fernández-Pardo and also Gordon and Munoz is that they can play across the front three. Fernández-Pardo is comfortable either on the left or through the middle as a centre-forward. In fact, it suggested that he prefers playing through the middle. Now, I think he'll need time to grow physically into the Premier League if he's going to play as a number nine in the Premier League. But versatility was seen as huge. But as I say, it looked like it wasn't going to happen. Now, Ross Wilson's, the sporting director, has said in his remarks in the club's press release accompanying the announcement of this transfer that Newcastle never really fully went away with Fernández-Pardo. They kept checking in to see if maybe it could happen. And in the last sort of week, 10 days of the window, when it was clear they wanted an attacking player, he was the one who they went back for. They went in quite aggressively because he hadn't moved elsewhere. They tried to negotiate remotely with Lille, and Olivier Letang, who is their president, is notorious for being a tough negotiator. Obviously, they'd already got big money as well for selling Bouadi to Manchester City, so they were under no obligation to sell. But at the back end of last week, Fernández-Pardo had made it clear he wanted to go. He wasn't training with Lille's first team, and so Newcastle sent a delegation to Lille via Eurostar to basically try and negotiate the deal. And over the course of the weekend, Lille sourced their replacement from Feyenoord and Newcastle managed to progress with it. And yeah, it's a really, really positive signing to end the window. Someone who has created a lot of excitement. Initial €60 million and on a 5-year contract, and really someone who I think does add that extra spice to an attack, which Newcastle started the season well, but I think we all felt they could do with something a little bit more, and this has certainly given them it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a little subliminal message here, a little tweak for us all in some of Ross Wilson's comments, because he does say Matthias, is it one T, is it two T's, is a strong example of how a transfer window can unfold with twists and turns along the way, a.k.a. stop losing your shit every time Newcastle don't get a player. But, I mean, of course, that is also a story of this window. We'll come on to that. But, like, you know, how things have gone for Newcastle. I mean, it really does feel like it started with a bit of a whimper and it's ended with a bang, which is, I guess, is the way you want it to go. It's been really difficult at times, but it ends with a real statement of intent, getting their top target right at the end, building on what they've done so far this season, building on the players they've already brought into the squad, and, you know, cementing that idea that this is a very, very new Newcastle. Brought in a guy who is lightning quick. You know, there's already a lot of speed in this Newcastle United team. And sort of cementing all those things. Now, I mean, I'm sort of joking because it's not like it's all been plain sailing, you know, internally within the club. They've had some tricky moments too. But it is a lesson to all of us that, you judge your window at the end. And sometimes you can't even judge your window then. It has to be a bit later, yeah. You know, it has to be a bit later on. But yeah, they got their
man.
I
was saying to you
end.
Guys before we joined the call as well, that I think the if you took the, you know, the transfer business at the start of August and you had a look at that, I think a lot of us as fans were kind of quietly panicking a little bit and thinking, my God, what is going on here, you know? And then when Eddie Howe left, you start to really panic and you think, is there just any direction here? Is the club a bit rudderless? What's going on? And I mean, I kind of believe that we're sitting here now as the window closes, feeling the way we feel, with two fairly positive, like one really positive result, one decent result against Liverpool. And the mood shift is just enormous, isn't it? I mean, it's huge.
It's part of what this club is all about and always has been. It is that those emotional shifts, we're kind of used to that. I think sometimes that's looked on a bit quizzically from people within the club sometimes. It's like, you know, just hang on, bit of patience. There has been a plan at the club this summer. We will come on and talk about this in some more depth. But of course, you know, in order for the plan to work, you've also got to sort of deal with circumstances. No one thought that they would be leaving. Nobody thought that Eddie Howe would be leaving or that Bruno Guimarães would be leaving. That's not what they wanted. Go back to May, there was a good chance that Johan Wisser might be going. Nobody thought that Nick Waltimade would be leaving. I mean, it's all of those things. All this stuff can happen. And so you have to react to events. But there has been a very deliberate strategy going on at the club at the same time. And that is something that we'll come on to talk about in greater depth.
But when you say about the speed that he brings, and I think that is so much as to what they expect and want from Fernandez Pardo. And it also shows how Newcastle have approached recruitment really over the course of the last few years. In a piece which I wrote on The Athletic overnight, which Tom Harris, our data writer, helped write with, there was a metric within it, which is from Skill Corner, and it's got peak velocity metric, which is basically an average of a player's three highest speeds across the course of a season. And last season, in the French top flight, only Fernandez Pardo and the only player quicker than Fernandez Pardo was Bradley Barcola. But then in the top 25, you have Anthony Elanga was 6th. This is across Europe. Fernandez Pardo 14th and Toure 16th. Gordon was 7th and Munoz was 21st, which shows that sort of pace that Newcastle want. And for Yeisler, that's so important as everything that he wants to bring into his side. And that's when you talk about stylistic fit and Nick Voldemort. I mean, you've got George, who's just exhaling because, you know, I'm speaking.
Peak
like
velocity metric. Just say he runs quickly.
But this is what they describe as. I'm giving across their data, so therefore I'm using what they use as their data set to describe it as.
But yeah,
he runs very, very fast, but this is actually recording it in an actual kilometres per hour. His fastest recorded sprints last season. Yes, I know it is, but I haven't described it as such.
Can he run vertically? That's what I want to know.
I need things.
Sorry, Chris, you're grumpy. We're all grumpy.
I need
We're
things explained to me in a sort of visual way. You know how they used to describe things as being four double decker buses long? That's kind of the way I like to have things. So is he as fast as a milk float? That's what I want to know. Or is it a taxi? I don't know. Anyway, that's how I need to learn. He has been most effective, apparently, as a number nine or on the left-hand side, George. This is good, though, isn't it? Because they want that little bit of adaptability, somebody who can play and is versatile across a number of different positions.
I mean, it's such an important part of the modern game. Clubs increasingly, you know, want this, do this. Eddie Howe did it. He loved players who could play in more than one position. Go back to when Alexander Isak arrived. He was seen as someone who could play wide as well as playing through the middle. Same with somebody like Anthony Gordon. You know, we know that Harvey Barnes can play both sides. It's such a valuable asset to have in the modern footballer. As Chris said earlier, it sounds like he's more keen on playing through the middle, but to have that other string to your bow, particularly if you get injuries over the course of a long season, it just means that you have those people that can slot into those positions and provide cover. And it's just such an important quality. You don't see that many out and out number nines in the modern game, for example. They just don't exist. And you get these modern footballers, these modern forwards who can play in a variety of positions. And he absolutely sounds like another one.
Following on from Nico Gonzalez, Chris, it feels like another coup, doesn't it, really?
It certainly does, and because Fernandez Pardo has been tracked by so many clubs across Europe now, for whatever reason, they haven't eventually gone and spent the money on him. I think if Atletico Madrid had ended up selling Julian Alvarez, then it looked like Fernandez Pardo was maybe the player they were going to look for. But for Newcastle to have followed him and tracked him for this long, felt he wasn't attainable, but then actually brought him in on the back of the Nico Gonzalez deal, which was that was the only intra-Premier League deal Newcastle did of all the eight across the summer. Nico Gonzalez is the only Premier League experienced one they've brought in. But Fernandez Pardo has played in Ligue 1. He's played in the Champions League. He's played in other European competitions. He's played at the World Cup as well. Yes, he wasn't an automatic starter for Belgium, and I don't think he started any of the games outside of the group phase, but even so, he has that experience and he's someone, but he's only 21 years of age.
Still very young, isn't he?
Newcastle say there's a lot of development to go with him. He started 39 games in Ligue 1 and a further two in the Champions League, and he's got five caps for Belgium, but he's still learning as to where exactly he wants to play. He's very like Anthony Gordon in many ways, seemingly, in that he likes to play off the left and then cut in inside on his right foot as an inverted winger. He can play on the right, but I don't think he's quite as comfortable there. Again, similarities with Gordon, but also through the middle. I think he sees himself moving forward that he wants to be that number 9. As I say, it might take time on that, but it's fascinating to see where he actually is going to fit in over the course of the next few months. Where does Yeisler see him starting? There's been some suggestions he could play as a number 10 and possibly, but that to me would seem, unless it's going to be like almost two forwards who are going to dovetail one the other, given that he has that raw pace, it would seem to me almost a waste if he's going to be in that number 10 position rather than as the out-and-out striker or on the left wing potentially being sent in behind. But that versatility is great because you now have him who you can play in a two or three positions there. You've got Wissa who can play in a few positions there. You've got Willisula who's out injured at the moment, but he can play theoretically across a few of those positions. And you've also got the wingers beyond that who can do so. And then you've got Willock and Ramsey who can play as a number 10 as well. So it seems like Newcastle have a variety of options, and maybe sometimes that will partly be horses for courses as to the game environment, but also the fact that Newcastle will have options on the bench. Yeisler will have options he can bring on to change a game later on.
Would you expect him to go straight into the first 11 like Nico Gonzalez did, or do you think he'll be brought in a little bit slower?
So he's been left out of the Lille team, isn't that right, Chris? I think it's because they wanted to wait to see what happened. There has been a lot of noise, a lot of rumours about his position. So I guess the big question would be, can he do that? Is he ready for it? Is that fair? Newcastle are also on the back of a really good win at Spurs. They haven't had a midweek game, so do the players who've started that game deserve the chance to stay in the team? Having said that, Dedic is at St James' Park for about 3.5 seconds and then immediately comes in and looks like he's been around forever. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of concern that he hasn't been playing for Lille because of that uncertainty about his position.
So, pending any late surprises, here's what Newcastle United have done in the 2026 summer transfer window. 8 new players for a total cost of around £265 million. What are our biggest takeaways from what the club have done this summer? George, let's start with you.
There are so many, aren't there? But, I mean, I think the thing that I would highlight first off is just that. Is the youth, is that side of it? You know, obviously there's a freshness, there's a newness to everything. Newcastle 2.0, as David Hopkinson kind of refers to it. But you look at these 8 players, none of them are over the age of 24. This is a proper new generation of talent at Newcastle United. And that has been a very, very deliberate strategy, deliberate policy. The squad was getting older. It was on the turn. Everybody knew that. Eddie Howe knew that. They had to make changes. They had all those windows when they didn't bring anybody in. And that had to change. But my goodness, they've really gone for it in those terms. I mean, there's like no compromise about what they've done. And so we have to see. We have to wait and find out to see if they're ready. But it just feels really, really exciting. It feels new and different and young.
I think my takeaway would be that whereas I've been asked quite a few times by people on social media how I would compare this summer to last summer and sort of has it been as bad. Now, I think this summer has been relentless, and that basically ever since the season ended, there's been something happening. Gordon goes immediately. Newcastle sign Zhao in. They're then missing out on Munoz. They're missing out on Manzambi, the signing players. Howe goes, and then there's all change. So this has felt more relentless, whereas last summer was very intense from the moment that Isak said he wanted to go. And so from that point on, it was really condensed at that point. But I also think the contrast with it. Yeah, and toxic. But I also think the contrast from them was, I would describe that as, with all the setbacks last summer, there was chaos or an element of chaos there and disconnect. Whereas within this, I think, although there have been setbacks along the way and Newcastle haven't got all of the transfers that they necessarily wanted incoming-wise, they lost Bruno Guimaraes, who they did not want or intend to lose. And obviously Eddie Howe went 2 weeks into pre-season, which was not part of the plan either. Despite all of that, it has felt like it's far more structured and that there's been a plan there, so there hasn't been the same element of chaos. And so when there is an overarching blueprint or idea behind it, and that you have flexibility within that, that you recognise you're not necessarily going to get all of your signings, but you have within it a vision as to what you want to achieve, that yeah. even if at certain points it can feel the window is difficult and is slipping away from you, you can hopefully end it. As we sit here now, it feels like this is a positive window and has been a positive end to the window. You can only take that in the here and now. Windows are very difficult to judge immediately, and we've seen that with previous windows at Newcastle. But I think relative to last year, whereas it always felt Newcastle was swimming against the tide to a certain degree, they never had control. This time, yeah, they have had an element of control, or at least have tried to instill that and have kept focused on what they want to achieve. And hopefully in the end, as we sit here right now, it feels like that has produced a positive end to it.
I mean, I was going to say as well, I think it's a great example of sticking to your guns and not panicking. There was times last season, obviously, with the Alexander Isak stuff, that it felt like the panic button was pressed, and the Nick Valtamada buy and the Johan Wisser at the time as well, though those transfers haven't worked out, or they hadn't worked out at the time. But now I think, I mean, we said at the top, 8 players, I think it's almost 10 players, isn't it? Because Wisser and Alanga look like 2 fresh players. And I hate to do the old Alan Pardew, well, he's like a new signing, but let's be honest. Like, those, we didn't have those 2 players last season. I don't care what anybody says. Those 2 players weren't here last season. So I think it's a massive bonus for us. And I do think it's great that the club haven't panicked and they've stuck to their guns. And they obviously knew what they wanted to do, and they've pushed through with it. You know, it's been impressive, I think. I think it's been impressive.
Totally agreed. And, you know, I think, you know, if we want to sort of ask the question about how the club are feeling about what's happened, I think, you know, last summer, you mentioned last summer, that has been, you know, that's been preying on their minds from day one. Like, they couldn't do that again. That could not be allowed to happen again. And they, you know, they couldn't panic. They wouldn't panic. If they were going to sell, we'll talk about outgoings, but if they were going to sell, they would have to try and do it more on their terms, which they definitely did with Anthony Gordon and Sandro Tonali. Now, the Bruno thing then happens, not part of their plan. So, you know, they try to stick to their guns as much as possible. They, in the end, they get a fee which they think is good. It's not the perfect fee, but they got what they wanted, what they needed out of it. And then it's about adapting and moving on. And yeah, there were those sort of early rejections at the start of the summer, which was, I mean, it was a difficult, the way it's been phrased inside the club is that, you know, there's been some soul searching gone on along the way. There's been some real low moments, and they would refer to some of those early moments as faith testers, you know, like they can yeah. totally understand that, particularly when it's then the manager goes, like we can't sort of pretend that that was easy for them. They thought Eddie Howe would be staying. He told them at the end of last season that he still had the fire, the hunger to carry on. And the list of managers that they had to choose from then becomes very different when he decides to go. Now, they're happy with that. They're happy with how it's worked out, because they think Matthias Jaissler is absolutely perfectly suited to what they need. But it's about, you know, you can have a strategy, but it's then about what you do when events take place. And, you know, yeah, they've ridden through some quite testing and difficult moments, but crucially, they've done it all together. There is this word alignment that they use about the way that they've worked, and they feel that they've come out of it stronger.
Who are we most excited about then? Let's pick one or two each. We'll start with you, Chris, then I'll have a go, and then George, you can round us off.
I'm going to be slightly greedy, because I'm going to give 1.5 answers, because my half answer would be Sean Stir in time, but I'm then going to pick someone for that. That it's very much you've seen what he can do now, but I think in 2 or 3 years' time, he could be some player, and hopefully Newcastle are in a position to keep hold of him by then. But if I'm going for the here and now and what they can actually bring, it is Nico Gonzalez. It's a close-run thing with Fernandez Pardo, but I just think what we've already seen from Nico Gonzalez and the fact that he's a different style of midfielder to what Newcastle have had before, and hopefully what he can help them do, particularly away from home, being able to control possession, just easy little passes, but then also being able to play those progressive ones in behind, break lines, and also get Newcastle forward. That he just oozes class, or he has seemed to ooze class so far. So I think I'm going to go for Nico Gonzalez there.
I think for me it was going to be Gonzalez or Fernandez Pardo, but Sean Stair as well. Like, you know, in the words of Emperor Palpatine, we'll be watching his development with a keen eye, definitely. He looks like a player, doesn't he? Even at his age that he is now, fresh, straight into the Premier League, straight into that game against Liverpool, and just the confidence of the lad. He sort of walks around with like a, I don't know, he's got like an air, like an aura about him, hasn't he? And for somebody so young, I find that so impressive. I am really excited about him. How about you, George?
Well, I mean, just to carry on that, makes it a bit boring. I mean, I think when he signed, there was a lot of excitement about what he would become or what he could become. But then he sort of started doing it straight away. And yeah, I think it's too early for him right now. I don't think the idea will be that he'll be playing every week. But yeah, right from the first moment, right from that first friendly match against Gateshead, he's directing people around, he's demanding the ball, he's playing ambitious passes. That he is the player that they viewed as the eventual Bruno successor, you know, that could be brought on alongside him and improve. That's not the way it's going to work out, but he's got some other, you know, he's got some other very exciting players to learn from too. Yeah. Pardo, like, I don't know much about him, but I'm looking forward to seeing that. I love a forward. I love a number nine type figure. And yeah, like the Dedic, it's like, what a start he's had to his career. I mean, like somebody who again was painted as a kind of understudy, like sort of this was a deal Newcastle had to do because they just needed cover in those positions. And he arrives, like, you know, nobody really making a fuss of him. But then,
yeah,
Jesus, like in the first couple of games he's played, just looks like he's been there forever. You know, I don't want to heap pressure onto any of these players, but that's the thing. That's the thing that's lovely about this situation. We've gone from a month ago, 6 weeks ago, thinking, like, who are these kids? Like, you know, are they? And now we're feeling, oh, this is really exciting. And it's like that injection of youth and fearlessness gets rid of the staleness that there was around the place. I talked a little bit about strategy. There's an analogy that someone senior at the club has been using over the course of the summer. It's about like renovating a house. It's like Newcastle have gone from being in this position where they're looking at it thinking, we've got to tear that down, we've got to tear that down, that doesn't work, that doesn't work, that doesn't work. And then what you're left with is like a massive gap between the kitchen and the backyard, and you see all these holes, you see all these wires dangling down, you see a set of stairs, and it all feels very safe. And you've got to have faith in what you're doing. And like in those moments, it's like, it looks shit. And yeah, there's been moments for Newcastle when it's looked shit this summer. It's looked really difficult. But now there's so much excitement around the team and around the club and around the management. It really helps that they've had a good start, but it means that they have momentum. And I don't feel like this club has had momentum for what, 12, 18 months?
Yeah.
Is there a single player you didn't name check there, George, as to who you're excited about? Did you just go through every single signing? I mean, that didn't really count, does it?
No, I didn't
mention Toure, did he?
I didn't mention Toure or Bamba or Jowen or Hornacek. That's at least half of them, Chris.
Where, Chris, if anywhere, have Newcastle left themselves short? There are a couple of injuries at centre-back away from being a little bit threadbare there, aren't they?
Yeah, well, going into the summer, I think they would have ideally liked a left-back. That was something that I've been talking about, but the full-back market is fairly light in general, and they obviously didn't find someone they want. But in Dedic and Tino Livramento, theoretically, they have two players who can play either side. Lewis Hall was also played at right back towards the back end of last season. You can argue not very successfully, but theoretically he could play there. Dan Byrne as well, and I imagine a lot of people will be tutting listening to that, but Dan Byrne could play as a left back if required. You also have Jacob Murphy as an emergency fullback, although there's one. And Mason Miley did well in pre-season. Centre back, yes, I agree with
Lewis
you.
Lewis Miley as well. Don't forget Lewis Miley playing right back. Lewis Miley, big, course, massive portion last season. Brilliantly, yeah,
and,
as well.
And Newcastle have a lot of midfielders now, so that would, although you want to see him in midfield theoretically, yeah, you could play there. The centre back situation, I think that I've mentioned this before, like Eddie Howe, Yeisler came in and thought it'd be nice to have a bit more pace there. And in Burn and Fabian Scher, they have two players who are 34 and sort of getting on a bit. I think in future windows, that is a position they'll look at adding a bit more youth into injecting it there. They couldn't do everything they necessarily wanted to do this summer. They also don't still really have that out and out number 10, but I think bringing in Fernandez Pardo, that means that they've got lots of options up front too, which they could move around a little bit. Now, you mentioned the spend earlier on. If you include all of the add-ons that Newcastle could pay, it's actually around about £300 million that they've invested this summer. The figure you brought up doesn't include that sort of add-ons, but they sort of see it like that. They include them all, which would make them around about the fourth highest spenders globally. Wow. Now, when it comes to incomings, they're also in a similar sort of position, and that's about £245 million if you include all the add-ons, which is a similar position. They're about fourth top globally there. So their actual net spend, if they end up receiving all of the bonuses that they from all those deals and spend them all, will be about £55 million. But actually, in money now, it's about £20 to £25 million net spend this summer, which, given the volume of players they've signed relative to those who they let go of, I think is pretty impressive.
You mentioned the pace centre-half, Chris.
Are you going to ask me to get my metrics out again, yeah?
Where do they rank on the velocity, elastic?
I'll go back to Skill Corner and I'll come back to you since you're so interested.
Verticality.
Yeah. Excellent.
I love you, Chris.
Bless him.
No comment.
I noticed that somebody mentioned this on the match day pod the other day. It was interesting that Johan Wisser described Matthijs Yeisler as being the best signing of the summer, George. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been pretty alarming if he'd called him the worst signing of the summer, wouldn't it? But I thought that was interesting as well. It feels like people are buying into him. I think as a fan base, people are buying into him. They kind of love what they've seen so far. And you
could take that almost as a bit of a slight towards Eddie Howe, but I don't think that's how it's intended, is it?
No. I mean, you know, Eddie Howe had close relationships with the players that were at the club. He's kept that dressing room. He's kept the first team together. I mean, it's him that's been fighting fires. You know, that was part of his decision to leave. You know, he was just exhausted from having to do that. Like, you know, we know it's absolutely reaffirmed by what's happened this summer that players wanted to leave. He always thought he could bring them round. There was that, he saw that tightness, that closeness that there was last season when Howe was in trouble. Remember how influential Bruno was, by the way, as part of that. Bruno and Jolinton were absolutely crucial in keeping that dressing room together and getting things, you know, going back Howe's way. So it's not that, but it is a fresh voice. We've been talking about this for so long that when you have a squad that's not being updated and refreshed, you've got the same man giving the same messages, no matter how good you are, no matter how intense you are, no matter how much you try to mix it up, it's very difficult to get that new reaction from people. And, you know, one way you can is by changing players. Newcastle have now done that. And, you know, the whole dressing room has been refreshed. And so that's really important. You know, like the Yeisler bit, it hasn't been stress tested yet in terms of, like, difficult results, difficult days. Let's see what happens then. But, no, there's just that kind of good feeling about everybody. And I think there's also that sense that everybody's in it together. And this is just a very small point that I'll make very briefly. Again, this is something we've talked about. Finally, the club have a structure that is kind of purpose-built. So if we go back to when it all began, like, there was nobody there. There were no directors post-takeover. Eddie Howe's appointed head coach. And then it's only after that that Dan Ashworth comes in. And then a little while after that, Darren Eales comes in. I can't remember the exact chronology of that. But it's like built backwards. And now you've got a CEO and a sporting director working in unison who've brought in a manager. It feels finally that there are sort of far more sustainable foundations to build on there. We'll be right back.
Right, let's move on to outgoings, chaps. Let's start with the most recent. Nick Valtamada to Juve. Chris, is this the end of an era?
I don't want to be quite as definitive as that because, I mean, as things, he's only going for, well, it's a loan with no option, no obligation. So as things stand, he's going to come back and be a Newcastle player again next summer. And if he does really, really well at Juventus, then perhaps Newcastle will find a way to integrate him moving forward. It doesn't seem like that as we sit here right now, the stylistic differences that seemingly both Jaisler and Valtamada have come to the conclusion of, that he's even less suited to playing under Jaisler than he was under Howe, and the intensity of it and the physicality and the way to move around. But I do think that it made a lot of sense to try and get this move for all parties, because for Valtamada, he clearly needs confidence. He needs game time to try and rediscover some of that form. The Italian league, cliches as it is, should suit him more, you would have thought. The sort of less physical and athletic nature of that division should be something which would serve him well. And then for Newcastle, it's allowed them to bring in Fernandez Pardo, to have someone who feels a better fit to what they want to achieve. And rather than just trying to find a way of shoehorning Valtamada into the side to get more out of him, at least that problem has been kicked down the road for a year, or then Newcastle can rediscover what they do at that stage. The way it's been described to me, this deal, and I don't understand the full ins and outs of it, is that Newcastle will make a profit on it. And I think that means both loan fee and wages, that they're not going to lose out from the deal when it's all sort of banked out. But then that point next summer, he'll be 2 years into his 6-year deal. That further value will have dropped off, the sort of amortised value Newcastle paid from £64 million. Maybe then Newcastle could look to do some sort of a permanent deal. So I wouldn't write it off completely. But yeah, I think that it was in the interests of everyone that a deal like this could be sorted. And I think it's a decent move for all parties.
Ironically, George, very little is actually black and white here, is it?
Well, he's going from black and white to black and white. It's just been very unfortunate. We've all been kind of waiting for that great leap forward with Valtamada. It's like, will a new manager come in and suddenly it kind of clicks? There was that narrative around the place last summer that it just, you know, Eddie couldn't make it work. And so maybe Mateus can, maybe a new guy can. And I said it last week, it just doesn't feel to me like he has the attributes to be a Newcastle United footballer in this generation of players, and with the way the team are wanting to play, which is full of energy, with aggression, with physicality, with pace, with pressing, all of those things, it just doesn't seem that it can happen. But I have to immediately sort of caveat that, and by saying, you know, like, Joe Linton was the biggest misfit ever as a number nine. He reinvented himself.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and I know that these attempts were made last season with Valtamada to play him in different positions. There has to also be that hunger and determination on his behalf to make it work, or not, and he goes elsewhere. But it just hasn't worked. You know, there were those beautiful touches, those great goals, lovely moments. His character was kind of great last season. He seemed to be enjoying himself. Then there was the step back, and he never impacted. He just doesn't impact enough. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. It's like, if you're not playing well, if it's not your match, if it's not your day, you've got to impact somehow. You've got to make tackles. You've got to make a nuisance of yourself. You put yourself about, you disrupt things, you win free kicks, you win fouls. Yeah. And there just wasn't enough of that. So, you know, I think we wish him luck. Hope he has a great season. Hope he smashes it over there. And if he is to come back, let's hope he comes back with kind of confidence and with a, you know, on a mission to prove people like me wrong.
To poo people wrong.
Is that what I said? Yeah. Well, poo.
To poo people wrong.
Then he could. Yeah. He can defy the poo boys.
So Anthony Gordon, Sandro Tonali and Bruno Guimaraes left for a combined initial £245 million, the fourth most any club has brought in during the closed season window. Chris, it's a lot of money, isn't it? But they were three massive players. They were hugely experienced, hugely influential in the team, and it didn't look great when those left.
No, it didn't. And when you mention Gordon and Tonali, they were envisaged and planned going into the summer. Gordon was to get Newcastle compliant. People in the club talked about having to sort of unfuck themselves, basically, from the position they were in, because it was that difficult.
Christmas.
Well, exactly. But it was that difficult, the sort of financial position they found themselves in. So Gordon basically got them compliant. Tenali was then to be able to invest. Bruno was not someone they envisaged or wanted to lose. So they have ended up spending more than they intended to, but that's also because they brought in more than they intended to, and they had to, or they thought they would, and also they had to at that point, once they lost Bruno, cover it by bringing in alternative players and of a certain value. Newcastle have sold very, very well in Gordon and Tenali. It was on their terms. It was two players who wanted to go. It was two fees which were higher than they anticipated getting. Bruno is different. Bruno was more of a distress sale, but one which they still managed to get all of the, or more money than they necessarily anticipated in the here and now. They may have ideally wanted sort of closer to Tenali money, but what they did manage to do was get £75 million guaranteed. Arsenal wanted to pay a lot of it in add-ons, and Newcastle said, no, if we're going to sell them, then what we want to do is get it guaranteed. Because what the difference that makes is, and it was the same with Tenali, that of the £100 million which Newcastle may get, £92.5 million of it's guaranteed. When you work out both UEFA financial calculations and also squad cost ratio calculations in the Premier League, you are only allowed to put down the money you are guaranteed to get. So the difference between putting down, say if Newcastle got 80-20 for Tenali instead of 20 of it not being guaranteed, they would only have been able to bank 20 over the course of that team. Instead, they've put down 92.5, which gives them greater capacity to spend that now because they're guaranteed to get it. The same with Bruno. They got 75. As a full package, you may see that as being a bit lower, but actually in what Newcastle can do right now, you could maybe argue that rather than if they'd got 85 million, but 60 of it now and 25 in time, they've actually given themselves greater capacity to spend it. So Newcastle see that as a positive. They would obviously portray it in that way, but they sort of see that as a positive. And they've tried to find a way of working around these rules. Thankfully, they had the assets and the ability to do that. Whereas if you think post-takeover, if Newcastle hadn't had FFP capacity and PSR capacity to spend, they didn't have the assets necessarily they would have wanted to sell and to have got this sort of money. So Newcastle have done very well on the sales front, and I think going forward they will look to sell at more opportune moments. Nobody wants to hear it, but maybe Lewis Hall or someone will go next summer, because Newcastle, until their revenues are far stronger, they are going to have to consider trading moving forward and moving people on at the height of their valuation.
We had a comment on Blue Sky from Steve Brown. He says, I'd like to understand where this deal, I'm presuming he means the Fernandes Pardo deal, I'm not 100% sure on that, but puts Newcastle RE squad cost compliance. Is it going to lead to 2 years of relative austerity? Does Champions League money become a necessity in the next 2 years, George?
Well, they need to be back in Europe, and they want to be back in Europe. Everything about what they're trying to do is about being in Europe and getting back into Europe. And they do, yeah, absolutely. They need that money to progress as a football club, to bring in more revenue, but it's also where they want to be. But no, absolutely not. To then go back to that first bit of it, relative austerity, no. Like this whole idea about them unfucking themselves, as Chris said, has been one of the driving forces behind that summer. And there are lots of, you know, there are lots of sort of little different sort of nuances to that. It's about correcting the overspend. Like something else that we have to sort of mention, David Hopkinson, in that interview I did with him about Newcastle United 2.0, says we were living beyond our means, and at some point you've got to pay the credit card bill. Newcastle did brilliantly in the previous version of themselves, Newcastle 1.0, if we want to talk about that. They won a trophy. They got to the Champions League twice. They signed some incredible players. They brought us, you know, those incredible moments. But it was this boom and bust, and it wasn't sustainable. Last summer was disastrous. They got huge money in for Isak, but they couldn't spend it in the way they would have wanted. It threw the whole season onto the back foot. They struggled. It was a slog. It left them with players who didn't fit into the system. And so this unfucking covers multiple, you know, like multiple sort of things. It's great. It's I'm like treating it as if it's like a vertical elastic ratio velocity, but like Chris, you can tell this is much more my kind of language. But like you know, it covers multiple things, and it's about ending up with a far more sustainable position where they have a young team again, so it grows in value with a bit of luck. They have a far more balanced squad. Yeah, they have to trade. They didn't trade. They tried to persuade players who were really, really good but wanted out to stay, and it left a sourness around the place. It made things very difficult last season. Can totally understand it. Chris said at the start, it's very much our understanding that, you know, they're not going to go out and spend big in January. They don't have that leeway to do that unless they bring money in for players. But the whole idea is that they can now trade on a regular basis. You don't have these windows going by without strengthening, that they can be far more strategic. They know what they're trying to do. They know what they're doing. And it becomes a much more sensible, serious, grown-up football club.
I've had a wonderful idea for a book, How to Unfuck a Football Team by George Colgan. I think we'll have publishers.
I'm not sure.
Publishers banging sure down the door.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would be the best author for that.
All right. Just before we move on to the final details, we're going to be doing our monthly Q&A for Extra Time subscribers. Most of those concerned will know how that works. But for those who don't, you can submit questions via our Discord or email, and we'll send out our newsletter tomorrow with details of all of that. So keep your eyes open on your inbox for that. Right then, the not goings. Let's go through those. Joe Willock, Chris, we expected him to leave, didn't we? I think everybody expected Joe Willock to leave. But on current form, he deserves to stay, doesn't he?
Yes, and there could even be a contract extension in there. I don't think it'll be necessarily a particularly long one, but he's into the final 11 months of his deal now. And for Newcastle to protect value, I suppose, and also protect him a little bit, Besiktas have been chasing him, and it looked for a long while like he would have gone there. I think if Howard stayed, then he probably would have gone. And even initially when Matthias Jäisler came in, the idea was that Willock was going to go. But given that an out-and-out number 10 hasn't been signed, and given that Willock has shown form both in pre-season and then the first couple of games of the season, scoring against Liverpool, doing reasonably well to a degree against West Brom, started against Spurs, probably wasn't quite as effective, but still, you can see that running capacity that he has from deep, which Newcastle haven't really got another midfielder who offers exactly what he does, that Jäisler has said that he wants to keep him, and Newcastle have responded by doing that. And you always get this with new head coaches and new managers, just someone with a fresh eyes, fresh perspective, and they want something slightly different, and Willock is clearly someone he wants to keep around. And fair play to the club for, again, when I said about the plan at the start, a plan, you can't just be fully set within that plan. I mean, incomings-wise, they didn't get a couple of the players that they wanted. They didn't expect Bruno to go. They didn't expect Howe to go. But you have to...
It's got to be adaptable, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be adaptable. So you've got to have the framework and an idea of what you want to do, and don't deviate too far from that. But you also have to be flexible. You have to change tack here and there. And Johan Wiss, I mean, in the spring, at that point, if Newcastle had received really good offers at the start of the summer, I think they would have listened to them for Wissa. That was the position they were in. But by the end of the summer, they're not listening to him, and he's staying, and he's part of the team. And it's the same with Willock. Even if for most of the summer it looked like he'd potentially go, in the end, you make a decision and you speak to the head coach, and as a club, you all decide on the strategy. And for now, he may go in January, he may go next summer, but for now, Joe Willock is staying, and he, as you say, deservedly so.
Jacob Murphy, George, Nottingham Forest have been sniffing around, but he also stays?
Yeah, now we enter the realms of, in terms of unfucking ourselves or fucking us, this is a live story. But as things stand, it looks like he will be staying. Jacob will be staying. Newcastle have lost a lot of experience this summer, and Murphy is part of the leadership group. Yes. He always has been. He's a manager's dream, and you can absolutely understand why Jäisler would want to keep him around too, in the same way that Eddie Howe did. He's uncomplaining. He sets a tone every day around the place, around the club. I'm not just, you know, saying that as a, you know, as a sort of damning him with faint praise, because he still makes an impact when he comes on for the team. Probably not a regular starter this season, but you also never know. And Forest have bid up to £15 million for him, but there is an expectation that he stays, and there is a desire for him to stay too, to repeat that sort of leadership that he shows. It's not a Dan Burn leadership, but it's a tone-setting leadership that Murphy has consistently shown around the club and is seen as hugely valuable.
Chris, Nick Pope. What's going on there? I think everybody expected Nick Pope to maybe leave this summer, but he still remains as we speak.
He does, and there's still sort of 7 or 8 hours left of the window, so we will wait and see whether he does actually leave on loan, as it would likely be at this stage. He's in the final year of his deal as well, as 34, and he's at best third-choice goalkeeper, possibly even behind Aidan Harris, or maybe be fourth-choice, and Jäisler had told him he was available to go, and he would have been available to go as soon as Newcastle signed the two keepers, which they ended up doing in first Ewan Jowen, and then obviously eventually in Lucas Hornacek. But He hasn't found the appropriate deal for him. I don't think Newcastle have necessarily been inundated with offers either. And it's one of those situations where I think for him, he's been a very good keeper for Newcastle. Yes, last season wasn't great, but I think he's been a very good servant for Newcastle. He'd signed that contract, which included an extension, in good faith. And if a deal that isn't appropriate for him hasn't come along, then I think all parties will just have to accept that and he stays around. And I know that you sometimes get ill feeling towards this sort of situation, say, oh, well, he shouldn't pick up his wages. But it's his livelihood, and he'd signed that contract. Newcastle gave him that contract initially, and if the inappropriate deal hasn't been able to be found, then that contract has to be honoured. And so, yeah, I don't expect he'd be the character who would cause problems behind the scene either. He has been part of the leadership group previously, and so having another experienced head, although not ideal in some ways because he's not going to be playing, maybe actually that may serve Newcastle well in other regards.
We expect to see maybe some youngsters loaned out as well. Sean Neave's been quite strongly linked with Wolves. Sounds like quite an exciting prospect for him, Chris.
Yeah, so I was at the under-21s on Monday night, which that was not necessarily a great experience for anyone involved from a Newcastle United perspective. They were beaten 4-0. And after the game, Robbie Stockdale was very critical of them. Now, we've obviously done a lot on the academy and sort of what the under-21's expectations are this season, and it's not necessarily all about winning matches, but they also want to perform far better than they did, and it did look like a team of individuals rather than necessarily a team, but just collectively, no one performed particularly well, including Sean Neave in that. Now, he looked to me like a player who maybe was hoping that he was going to get a move the day after and possibly was just holding back a little bit because he didn't want to ruin that sort of chance that this may be unfair, he may fight back against this. But the fact that he could possibly move on deadline day, and Wolves would be a very good move for him. Yeah, he probably wouldn't start all the time, but to get in around that to play at championship level would be great for him. Certainly, I hope he does get that move before the end of the deadline. Looks like Leo Shahar's probably going to stay around because he's been in and around the sort of first-team squad. Sungsu Park, he's another one who could potentially go on Mirdrag Pivas as well. Sungsu Park, the complication is he's going to wait the Asian Games for a month, which may deter clubs from wanting to take him out on loan because that's a big chunk of that gone. But it would be good to get one or two more of these youngsters out, those ones who look like they have outgrown under-21s football, and Sean Neave certainly is. I don't see what benefit he would get out of staying and playing under-21s football if he isn't going to play regularly for the first team, which given Fernandez Pardo's signing, you would say is unlikely between now and January.
Okay, lovely stuff. Right then, the Lasses host Wolverhampton Wanderers in their opening WSL 2 fixture this Sunday as well. Kathleen McGovern hit a hat-trick as they beat Burnley in their last warm-up. Positive feelings in the camp as well, George.
Yeah, I'm sure they can't wait to get going. You know, we've just spent an entire pod talking about the kind of whirlwind that there's been around the men's first team this summer, but it's certainly been the case for them as well. Really ambitious, loads of signings. We heard from Tanya Oxtoby on the pod not too long ago, and they all know what the goal is this season. I mean, it's, don't want to say it's promotion or bust, but it's absolutely everything has been geared towards that. So I'm sure they can't wait to get things going.
Well, that's just about it. Get in touch, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Give us a follow on your social medias as well. Just pop Pod on the Tyne into the search bar and I'm sure you'll be able to find us. Like and subscribe on YouTube as well if you are watching on there. Hope you're enjoying it. And remember, Extra Tyne subscribers will get a monthly Q&A this Friday. You know the drill where that's concerned. Right, thank you very much for your time, Chris Woff, and congratulations on getting through another transfer window.
Thank you. Well, there's still a few hours to go, so don't congratulate me too soon in case something was to happen in the next few hours. But I just want to say that I am just about to close my summer-long Google Doc, which it's currently on 135 pages.
Don't
which
talk
I,
dirty to me, Chris.
I reduced it down to 11 pages worth of notes, which George and I have then produced quite an epic, but reduced epic article on the inside Newcastle's window. I mean, there has been a lot to cover, as there have been over the last couple
of those
of
you who don't know this, you know Chris loves sausages and meat and all that. Chris loves Google Docs even more than he loves those things.
It's unbelievable. 100-odd pages. I mean, in a document which I then didn't look at once. I mean, how can you look at that? Well, I can't look at it. It's too long. So Chris then has to turn that document into a separate document of only a mere 11 pages. Chris, however, is an astonishingly dedicated man who has been brilliant this summer and, you know, has got extraordinary contacts at Newcastle and has kept us right. Very, very proud of him for keeping it going. And I hope, having gotten his nerves a little bit earlier, can we all just go at the pub with peak velocity?
Your Let's peak velocity that. That would be very like slow, I imagine.
It would be, yeah, it'd be limping, but... Well done.
Right then, that's just about it. I will just say, by the way, if I've looked slightly uncomfortable during this episode, it's because I inhaled a Greg's sausage roll just before we came live, and I've had the worst heartburn I think I can ever remember having all the way through this episode. It's been horrific. So if it's looked like I'm about to keel over, it's because I have. I am about to keel over. Oh.
But if Greg's do want to sponsor us, then, you know, we are here. And we are here. Ever willing.
Absolutely. Right, and that's it from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Have a great week. Enjoy yourself. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye. Let's all go and unfuck ourselves.
I was going to say, let's all unfuck ourselves off.
Good Lord. Sorry, I've been really, really struggling all the way through that. I don't know if you've noticed, I've been like doing this in my seat.
Yeah, I have noticed, yeah.
And like trying to stretch.
I imagine Ollie's going to give me a telling off now for inhaling it. That's really freaky.
I had nothing to eat. I was running around like a maniac, buying new school bags and school shoes for the kids going back to school tomorrow. It's been a nightmare. But yeah.